You are listening to the Archery Maniacs Podcast.
This is Remy Warren.
I am Rihanna Carey.
My name is Adam Foss.
This is Paul Tedford, professional archer.
Hey everyone, I'm Christy Titus, and you are listening to Archery Maniac.
We cover everything archery, from the hunting side to the tournament side, with stories, tips and tactics, gear reviews, and more.
That helped my tuning game so much when I made sure that all my arrows were square.
And I'm just staring into his eyes. Blood's dripping off of its tines. Mud is everywhere.
The clarity these mavens offer is amazing.
I'm just like Spider-Man, you know, on this rock, you know, just laying there.
Belly crawling in there, and I can barely fit in there, and I can hear the cat growling at me.
So I put my hand on his shoulder and pushed him, and we just ran at this elephant.
In this episode, I have Yosti Perkins-Killer on the show. Yosti is no stranger to archery, tuning, hunting, tournaments, and living the archery lifestyle. We cover his start into archery. Did you start with hunting or tournaments? Anchor points, long shots, bear shaft tuning, Lewis Holmes, the mental aspect of archery, tuning his bow from A to Z, finding your perfect draw length, and more. I hope that you enjoy the show.
Hey guys, Yosti Perkins-Killer here. You are tuned in to Archery Maniacs. Good morning.
Super excited to have Yosti on the podcast today. I've read some of his articles and kind of been following him for a while now, but I never found him on social media until just the other day. And I was like, man, what a great person to have on the podcast, because I've personally learned so much from you. And I just thought that, man, you would be an awesome person to have on the podcast. So I really look forward to, you know, getting to know a little about yourself and how you became who you are today. And then we'll dive into a little bit about some of the things that you look for when tuning your bows and hunting and all that other kind of stuff. So yeah, so thanks for hopping on the podcast this morning.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And honestly, you picked up a subject that I really wasn't keen on for a while. I guess I'm a little old school. The social media side of it, I was actually through sponsors. My sponsors told me, hey, you got to get on social media. I'm kind of one of those old school kind of hick guys, almost a hermit type, but I'm getting into it. I'm learning lots by the day, and I'm happy that we actually got to meet, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. I'm super excited about it. But as soon as I saw you, it didn't take me but 10 seconds to click the message button and send you a message.
Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us, you know, tell us a little bit about kind of your upbringing into archery and the outdoors, and how it went from, you know, shooting your bow once a week, like some people do, which is awesome, to a lifestyle that if you're not doing it, you don't feel like yourself.
Well, thankfully I was introduced to archery by my dad, and being native, I guess you can say it's been a long family tradition. I got into archery really early in life. I think I got my first bow. My dad got us our first bows when we were 5 and 6 years old. And by the time I was 14, 15 years old, I had already decided that I wasn't really into the gun thing, you know, the gun side of hunting. I was more into archery, and from right about there, I remember going to the archery shop by myself, carrying my bow with me, and we moved to New York for a little bit for business, and I'm not a city person at all by any means, but it did teach me, you know, how to relate with others way better than I would have back home. I remember having to carry my bow on the train on a public train. If people look at you like you were, you know, some kind of drug addict because you're carrying a, you know, a big old bow case on the subway. And I was so into it that it didn't bother me at all. Eventually, the guys at the archery shop said, hey, man, don't worry about it. Leave your bow here. So I didn't have to carry my bow anymore, which was great. But I would have to travel 40 minutes by public transit to get to the archery shop, the nearest archery shop. And those guys, that place is called Proline Archery in Queens of New York City.
Okay.
To who my shooting today, I have a lot to thank those guys for. And I stay in touch with them and everything else to this day. That was literally 20, 25 years ago. So I don't want to give my age out because I'm starting to get up there a little gray now, but it's all right. It's part of life. And early on, I was fortunate to meet some guys that, you know, kind of helped me right off the hop. Saw that, you know, I used to shoot fingers.
Okay.
And told me, hey, man, you're plucking your string. What the hell does that mean? You know?
Yeah.
What are you talking about plucking? You know, hey, man, don't pick your hand out when you let the string go. Kind of just let your fingers die, you know, like relaxed.
Uh-oh.
Scores are plucking the string to being not being able to stay in the middle of the gold. And it kind of killed me for a while, and I didn't understand, man, these guys are ruining me. And all in all, to be honest, they were helping me to the fullest. It took me about a year to get through it. But finally, all of a sudden, I started hitting, you know, the 10 ring a little bit more, and eventually shooting fingers. I was shooting 300s, and I started going to archery tournaments to try to see how I could do, and local archery tournaments treated me really, really well. I was shooting against guys with releases with my, you know, my three fingers, and started whooping up on some of them. Made me feel good, man. So it built the fire in me to keep going. Started winning some money, and all of a sudden I won a pretty big archery tournament in New York, and I got approached by a bow company. Hey, you want to shoot a bow of ours? Like, man, I don't have the money for that bow. And he's, no, we'll take care of that. Oh, that was a free bow? Right on. Little guy, I was literally like, dude, I can't afford you guys' bows. You guys' bows, $700-$800. That was a lot of money at the time.
Oh, man, it still is.
Man, for this day, that's a fact. And I eventually, you know, started picking up some sponsors, but I let this sponsorship started affecting my shooting because I started feeling pressured to, oh man, I gotta perform. And I got to meet some other people in the archery industry that saw, you know, I was kamikazing down to the world, you know, like in a bad way. My shooting went to pieces, and luckily I had some really good buddies that I met up with, and these guys were IBO world champions, ASA world champions, and they took me under their wing. And one of the guys, his name is Charlie Owens. He's still one of the top shooters in the world. And Charlie took me under his wing and said, man, don't worry about anything these guys are saying. Don't worry about what sponsorship you have. They approached you. Stop thinking you approached them, and stop thinking you have to impress them. The only person you have to impress is yourself. And that mental part of it really stuck. So he worked with me for a little bit. And after I got my mental back, started winning again. And we went on, and all of a sudden I realized, you know, man, these guys' scores are really starting to kick up really fast. What's going on? And that's when we got into the technical side of archery. And today, I think the two most important things is, in archery, when you're hunting, when you're on the target line, doesn't matter. You have to have a totally tuned setup to have the confidence in your setup to make that shot count every time. If you're thinking your bow is out of tune, you're thinking about the wrong thing when you're taking the shot. So it all, you know, becomes one. If your bow's out of tune, you're out of tune. You're mentally out of tune. So first things first, I always tell people, get your bow in tune, make sure, you know, you're shooting bullet holes. And I really get in depth with it. I don't just, you know, I can get a paper tune with two different spined arrows with a couple different weights in the front and everything else, and that's cool, but what I'm looking for is for a forgiving setup. And this is where we start talking about the technical side of it. So we talk about cam timing, cam lean, and deflection of limbs and how you like your deflection of limbs. And that's, I really become a little tool head when it comes to that. Honestly, I'm a weird, you know, I'm a bow geek, to be honest. I pull my bows apart, retune them, see how they shoot. If they're tuning good, that's cool, but they're not tuning excellent. So I'll pull the bow apart again, literally pull all the limbs off, everything, reset the bow, shim the cams, see where the bow shoots the best. And a lot of people will go, well, what's shimming? What's deflection? You know, I guess we'll get into that throughout the conversation.
Absolutely. That's crazy. Cause I've noticed too, as I've started learning more, and not just learning more too, but also getting, you know, the right equipment that allows me to be able to do stuff like that. I've noticed that my confidence goes up as well, you know, because you can take it to a bow shop, and if it's a good bow shop, the guy knows what he's doing. Yeah, that's great. He's going to help you out, but he's not going to work on your bow as hard as he's going to work on his own bow. And much like yourself, you know, you're going to work on your bow. And if you have almost a bullet hole, but it's slightly, you know, low tear or tear, like whatever, if it's almost there, but not quite, a bow shop is going to be like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, because he probably has 10 other bows to do the same thing with that day. And he's got to get through them, you know?
Right. I mean, a great bow shop, you know, they'll take care of you as much as they can.
Yep.
But we all have to remember that they are a shop. They're there to make money. They're there to work on a few customers. The only person that's going to work on your bow, as you said, with full passion, is you yourself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, you come to the house here. I have an entire bow shop in my house. I have two presses. I have every loop material on earth. I have a couple different sets of strings, cams galore. You know, I go through everything. And people come into my house and go, man, did you have a bow shop at one time? No, man, this is just my personal stuff. And it makes me wonder, man, I must be a little weird or something. This can't be good. People are asking if I had a bow shop or something. God almighty. But I'm into it that bad, man. Or that good. And like you said, you know, that left tear, some bows, you know, not trying to jump from one subject to another, but some bows, you know, a lot of people go, well, you got to get a bullet hole. I've actually had some bows that shot better with a slight high left tear. I've actually had some bows that shot, and this is unexplainable till this day for myself. I've actually had some bows shoot with a low tear, and low tear is usually the worst tear you can have. But I've had bows that shoot with a low tear really good. I tell you, I mean, bow archery can drive you crazy. It can bring you to the epitome of happiness, and it can drive you crazy at the same time.
Oh, that is so true.
Oh my God, this is a love hate thing, man.
So, how old were you when you shot your first animal with your bow?
I think I was 14 years old. I was 14 when I shot my first animal. It was I don't even know how to explain the deer. He was a 2-year-old deer that just had horrible genetics. I guess we did the place of favor, our place of favor, because this deer had one long spike, 3 points on the other side. It was the ugliest spike in the world. And I was, you know, you're the happiest man in the world when you're 14 years old. You
right.
Dad, I'm going to get this mounted. He said, no, you're not, by God. No, I got to get it mounted. You know, kids are crazy, you know, and I was one of the worst about it. But yeah, I was 14 years old, shot the ugliest deer on the place. I was happier than it could be, though.
So when did you start off and you were more serious about the hunting side of archery, or were you more into the tournament side?
Absolutely. I was definitely about the hunting, but anything that would allow me to shoot my bow, I was happy. So I started going to archery range. we'd put up the paper animal targets, you know, and oh man, I would have killed that deer. Oh man, I shot him right in the butt. Oh goodness gracious. And you start working again. And, all of a sudden I got into target league. I got into the 3D league, and anything that would keep me shooting my bow, I was happy. I was obsessed and still am obsessed with archery. My dad till this day goes, man, this thing has encompassed your life. Proud to say it. My kids shoot everything else, man. All my kids shoot.
That's awesome. Yeah. My dad said the same thing. He's like, what are you doing this weekend? I said, well, I'm going to another state. What are you doing? I was like, I'm going hunting.
There you go.
He's like, what? Haven't you hunted enough this year?
there's no such thing as enough hunting.
Oh, there's not. There's not even close.
No, there's not enough hunting.
No, there is. Yeah, there's not.
This is the hard time of the year right now. I tell you, like right now, I find myself watching videos, going through pictures, and thinking of ways to get out there with my bow. We actually just scheduled a hunt in Texas in April. That's the only time we get out is April. We're going on a pig hunt. And bacon is on the menu. Bacon on the menu, bud. I tell you. So we're going to try out some really good things. We're going to get to try out, I'm going to get to see how this new RX Turbo shoots.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I'm loving the bow so far. Actually just in transition with companies right now and moving on with Hoyt. This is the first time I'm talking about it with anybody, so I guess everybody's going to hear it now. I've been with PSC for 5 years now. Love the company, love everything about it. I just different opportunities opened. And I started out with Hoyt, and I think I'm going back home. You know, that's the way I look at it, and going back home to Hoyt.
That's cool. So, yeah, I'm like you. I've kind of gone around in circles with bows, and I think just like Ford, Chevy, and Dodge, there's a reason that there's multiple, and you just got to shoot what feels best to you. And yeah, I don't. anytime you get a new bow, you just want to go out and shoot something so bad.
You get an itch, man. And the worst thing is you'll get your new bow right after season. And
yep.
It's like, why would you give me a bow after season? And it's horrible. You know, it's like you sit around watching paint dry and hoping somehow that they open up a new season. Oh my God, we need a new season here. And, Our first season is August 15th in the state for antelope. And then about 2 weeks later, we open up into elk and deer.
Uh-huh.
So you got some things to, you know, help numb the crave. But
yeah, I guess you guys have spring black bear there, don't you?
Yeah, No, we have a few bears here in the area. I typically have to go west for bears.
Gotcha.
I'll go whack some turkeys pretty quick. I love turkey meat. I love wild game. That's one of the reasons why I stay hunting more than anything. My family, we don't eat store-bought meat at all. Not one bit. And my kids, this is my theory, I guess. My kids don't get sick like other kids. I have 6 children and we never get sick. I mean, everybody else is running around with colds and the flu and everything else, and we're doing good. I mean, there is not a hormone in the meat that we eat.
Yeah, that is true. I very, very rarely, you know, if we want, you know, once in a while we have chicken. But other than that, same way. Ours is elk or deer or antelope or fresh caught fish. My wife's dad lives in Alaska. That's where she's from. And so he'll send us fresh caught fish, you know, so we're the same way.
Is there a way that I can be part of that family now? Because I'd love some Alaskan fish, man.
Oh, I'd gladly give you some.
Oh, man. We were in Alaska here in October 20th to October 30th, we were on Kodiak.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, we came off on a Sitka blacktail hunt, and I mean, we had great luck and we had horrible luck. We literally got dropped in to the area, to an area that has been known for good animals, and you usually don't think about bumping into hunters in Alaska. There were four other camps right around us, and it just made for some seriously hard hunting. The area got hunted really hard, and the maturity of animals was down. I mean, we ended up doing all right. I shot a 3x4 Sitka at, it was a longer shot than most would like to hear about, but this is part of the whole, this whole part of that whole technical side of it, you know, that what archery isn't the same anymore. The 20 and 30 yards
doesn't need to be there.
That's right. I mean, I shot that deer at, what did I shoot him at? I shot him at 69 yards, and the deer I shot before him was a 3x3 that I shot at 107 yards.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only shot I had, and they both went down. I mean, one went down in about 50 yards. The other went down at 120 yards.
Yeah, so, well, and I think, too, just like you're saying, you know, not only is the equipment better, but when you super tune your rig, that's a huge difference. And then on top of it, you're hunting in Alaska. The smallest animals there, basically, that are prey to everything. So getting 40 yards is not that easy.
Oh man, it was definitely a learning lesson for me. I shot a Sitka years ago, and we just happened to come over the hill, and there was a Sitka standing there, and I had a tag. Go ahead, shoot him. We'll have camp meet. All right, cool. This was down on Valdez. We were actually goat hunting, and had another tag with me, and worked out good. And this time, when we went to Alaska, it was, you know, it was four Sitkas. And man, these deer would look at you from a half mile away. You'd be walking down the valley, and look, oh, there's some deer. And you pick up your glasses to look at them. Man, they've been looking at you, I guess, for the half mile before that, because it was, Jesus Christ, these animals are lit up. So it was definitely an eye-opener. I could not believe how aware these animals were. I mean, they were like whitetails.
Yeah.
They were serious. And they picked you up from so far away. So I guess, you know, when you do talk about the technical side of archery and how it can be beneficial, it was definitely beneficial on this particular hunt. Getting to the technical side of it, people go, well, man, how do you know if you're going to hit the animal or at 107 yards or whatever the case may be? I tune my bow. I bear shaft tune my bow out to 50 yards. So what I mean by that is I'll take three arrows that are fletched,
mm-hmm.
bear shaft, and I'll make sure that bear shaft hits in the same place that those other three arrows do. And people go, well, you know, my arrow always kicks. It started about 10 yards. It starts kicking. It starts going this way, that way. That lets you know, you're probably doing something with your hand at the shot. You're probably torquing your bow a little differently, and it's just showing up because there's nothing to help steer the arrow. And it teaches you how to keep totally relaxed hand, how to keep everything exactly the same. Archery is one of those sports that requires a man with a pulse to turn into a machine. It's all about repetition. It's all about muscle memory. And this is where you start losing people. And hopefully this helps people understand what I'm talking about. When you shoot a bear shaft, it really shows your inconsistencies. And you'll bear shaft your arrow through paper and you'll get a bullet hole. Oh man, bow's perfectly tuned, right on. And then you go out there and you shoot your bear shaft with your fletched arrows at 10 yards and you wonder, well, what happened there? You know, it's up, it's down, it's kicked this way, it's kicked that way. Well, that's letting you know that something isn't as consistent in you as, you know, you would think. So I bear shaft a lot. I bear shaft shoot a lot. Matter of fact, I always have a bear shaft in my quiver when I'm practicing. And I'll get it out to 50 yards is about the best I can do. And that's, I mean, honestly, that's really hard to get. The more point weight you put on a bear shaft, the easier it is to shoot them. But you're not going to shoot a 300 grain tip at an animal, typically. You know, so you have to learn how to shoot your bow perfectly.
When gotcha. So is that what the bear shaft is telling you? It's telling, rather than telling, you know, like paper tuning tells about your bow being, you know, off kilter or whatever else, bear shaft tuning is telling you and what you're doing incorrectly is kind of what you're saying?
Absolutely. So you bear shaft tune, you know, you bear shaft tune through paper, you shoot, you see that perfect bullet hole. And as I said, as I stated earlier, the heavier the point weight, the easier it is to get a tear, a perfect tear. The lighter it is, the, you know, the more finicky they can get. So I make sure, you know, if I'm shooting 140 grains, that's what I'll shoot just to see, you know, where I can build myself up. And I'll relax my hand on my bow to make sure everything is right there. And where a lot of it consistency comes is actually in your anchor and reference points. And what I mean by that anchor and reference, my anchor point, as with most, is I shoot a hinge. I shoot a back tension release for everything. I don't trust myself with a thumb button. I don't trust myself with a index. I'm the punchiest guy in the world, man. So I just call a spade and accept it for what it is.
Yeah.
So my anchor is my pointer knuckle and my middle finger knuckle. The groove in there, to the jaw, to the corner of my jaw. That's my anchor point. And a lot of people go, well, okay, that is an anchor point. And then they go, well, my anchor point's my nose. That's actually technically you should have two reference points in your anchor point, making for a perfect 3-point set of consistency. So you see people pushing up against their nose really hard, or they're squeezed up against their face. We all have to remember that the more pressure you put on your string, the more pressure you have to keep consistent. So I always try to help people with, yes, you want the most solid anchor on earth, but your reference points, you're using the sensitivity that God has given us on the end of our nose and the corner of our mouth. I try to feather the tip of the string to the tip of my nose as to the corner of my mouth. And that's easier to replicate every time than pushing up against my nose or up to the side of my mouth really hard, because you never know how much you're pushing.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to manipulate a string at let off. A lot of people go, well, it's, you know, I got 12 pounds of holding weight. 12 pounds of holding weight is nothing when you have your backhand that can move around a little bit, your bow arm that can move around a little bit, and you're pushing up against this or that. If you ever draw a bow, have somebody draw a bow, you can grab their string and their drawstring while it's at let off and move it around like it's totally loose. It's almost spaghetti-like. And that's really easy to manipulate when you're in a nerve-wracking situation and people go, well, my arrows are hitting high, my arrows are hitting right, my arrows are hitting left. I can't get anything to stay consistent. That's where that bear shaft helps to show you. Man, I pushed a little hard this way. I eased up this way. It the same thing is a fixed blade broadhead. Fixed blade broadheads can show you a lot. If you shoot with a fixed blade all the time and then you jump back to field points, you'll blow your mind. You're like, "Oh my God, I've never clacked arrows at 80 yards."
Yeah.
And, you know, A fixed blade broadhead will make your bow super sensitive. Any inconsistencies with yourself, you know? So that's the way I try to teach. I mean, I know I'm getting into too much too fast, but
no, that's perfect.
It's something for people to start thinking about, you know, bear shafting all the time is always great. It shows you what you're doing. You start opening up in groups. You know, you're shooting a 2-inch group at 50 yards, and all of a sudden you walk out one day and you're shooting a 6-inch group at 50 yards. Grab a bear shaft and shoot it. It'll show you all kinds of weird stuff that you're doing. and I tell you, man, it's hard to swallow sometimes because, oh, my bow. You always want to blame it on something.
I've never even shot bear shaft, so it's awesome hearing you talk about it. Because I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to go home and start trying some bear shaft. Now, for me, it is a little different. I shoot Valkyrie broadheads, and the broadheads themselves with the outsert weigh 220 grains. So, like you're saying, with the weight up front, like you're saying, my bear shaft might be a little less sensitive because of that weight. But I also shoot an extremely my overall arrow weight is still only 466 grains.
Wow, you're shooting a really light arrow with a really heavy. Oh, that's actually a perfect setup, to be honest.
Yeah, so that's what I shoot. But I still want to try this bear shaft tuning.
Oh, yeah, I mean, just be ready. I hate to say it like this, but my dad always told me, say it like it is, so there's no misunderstanding.
Yep.
You're going to get humbled.
That's good. That's good.
You're humbled. And it humbles me right when I think I'm the baddest dude on earth. I'll grab my bear shaft and it'll go, oh, by the way, you suck. It'll let me know I suck again. You know, yep. And it's like, oh, and it just teaches you again, you know, shoot. And I got a buddy. His name is Lewis Holmes. This guy is one of the most consistent shooters I've ever seen in my life. And he'll take bear shafts, three or four bear shafts, and shoot groups with them out to 50, 60, 70 yards.
Man.
And it's like, man, I suck. But it gives you something to aim for, you know what I mean? Man, and he's younger than me, man. This guy's a phenomenal shooter. He actually just got back from Vegas. He made the 900. He's made the 900 round three times. And nobody even knew who Lewis was. And all of a sudden, this guy stepped up to the plate and shot a 900 round, not being sponsored, not being nothing. People didn't even know who this guy was. And he came out of nowhere and spanked people. I mean, and this was his third year making a 900 round. And when people talk about 900, for those that, you know, don't know what I'm really talking about, 900 is Vegas is the largest archery shoot in the world. It's called
the Indoor World Champions, I think.
Yeah, Archery World Fest.
Yep.
And you have to shoot 30 arrows a day in a 10 ring. Oh, and it sounds easy, but when you have a prize purse, first place prize purse of $52,000, it puts a little bit of nerve into it, you know. I tell you, it starts messing with you. I mean, I've never 900. I've 899 the snot out of that dang tournament, but 899 means I missed one arrow throughout the weekend.
Yep. And what's crazy is there's so many great archers there is that one point kicks you out.
You're done. I mean, yes, you get the chance to shoot a lucky dog, which is, you know, lucky dog is where they'll have all those guys that just missed by one point shoot off for an inside out baby X, which is the little 10 ring in the middle of the big 10. And you have to be inside out to be the lucky dog. And you have to go through guys that will shoot that. They'll exit and you guys got to shoot it off till somebody misses. That last guy standing is the lucky dog. And then he gets to move on and shoot with the 900 boys. But that itself is a feat, man, just to get there.
Yep.
But get back to Lewis, Lewis is one of those guys that totally believes in bear shaft tuning. And I shouldn't say believe. I should say we should all start doing this because it's something that's just going to make you a better archer, a better hunter, a better shot. And the more consistent you are with your bear shaft tuning, the better off you're going to be in the woods. The more it's going to show you that you can make that shot at 50 yards, that you can make that shot at 60 yards. You know, it's God's honest truth.
Yeah, which is huge. I mean, the confidence that, you know, playing a role in being successful, your personal confidence is huge. It's insane.
Oh, that's a fact of life. Without confidence, I mean, most guys, you know, go, well, I think I can make that shot. This is the mental side of it. If you think you can make that shot, you may make it. If you don't think you're going to make that shot, you're probably not going to make it.
And don't take it.
And don't take it. But if you know it, but if you know you're going to make that shot, it'll make that arrow will get there. And whenever I step up, whenever I draw my bow on an animal, I know I've already seen it. You know, you have to picture it. Picturing the image helps to feed your subconscious, helps to feed your subconscious mind. So you see it happen in your mind. You know, you picture it, picture where the arrow hits, and it already puts a positive note in your mind. Positivity gives you a positive reaction. So when I draw on an animal, I already see that arrow hitting him, and I put my pin there and focus till the arrow hits him. That's part of that's 90% of the hunt situation. Everybody goes, well, yeah, you know, the 10% it's hard to even explain. It's so important. That 10% is the tuning of your bow, is you knowing how to make a shot properly, is knowing that everything physically is there. But the 90% is mental,
mm-hmm.
Totally mental.
Yeah.
And I can't stress that enough. People go, well, man, how do you do it? How do you do it every year? And it's like, please don't say that. You're going to jinx me. You know, so superstitious about it too, man. It's sad. The most superstitious damn archer you've ever met in your life. And people are like, oh my God, how'd you do it? How'd you stay calm? I didn't stay calm, but I accepted that my nerves were racked. I accepted. Yeah. I'm not going to try to fight, you know, being nervous or being, you know, all hyped up. All right, I'm hyped up. Accept it. Use it. Use it to help get that shot off. And man, I shake like a crackhead under oath when I draw my bow on a big animal. You know, but I use it. All right, I'm pumped up because this is the animal that I'm here for. And I had I shot a bull this year. I remember. This is the stuff that you don't want to remember. I remember drawing my bow and shaking the whole way to full draw. I was like, oh, God, I thought I grew out of this. And, you know, a little bit and accept it. And, I mean, right where I was aiming, right where I was focused is where the arrow hit. It was a 65-yard shot, and the bull went 30 yards. And, you know, that just right there, you go, all right. It works, you know, in your mind, it works, you know, yep. The confidence, the accepting of being nervous or whatever it is, however you want to cope with your nerves and know that it works for you, work with it, use it to your advantage. You know, a lot of people go, well, I'm nervous. I can't draw my bow. Oh my God. I'm like, you know, and then they miss the opportunity. Accept it. You know, a lot of people go, well, this guy's crazy. He's on crack or something. It's truth, man. You know, I really accept being nervous in the woods. I accept being hyped up. And I just go, all right, well, I'm just going to use it now to my advantage. Because
mm-hmm.
Who knows when you're going to get that opportunity again on such an animal.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the end goal, is to get the opportunity, you know, and then capitalize on it. So. You know, knowing and expecting that every opportunity is going to give you that type of feeling is pretty important.
Oh, man, I tell you. I mean, I always talk about technical, but I always forget to talk about the mental. I
yeah.
forget to talk about, you know, this is – people go, man, it can't be that important. It is the most important thing. You think, you know, these guys that are on the archery line shooting for $30,000 and $40,000 a weekend, you think they're not focused in a perfect way? You think that they've not worked on their mental? You talk about professional football players, you talk about professional baseball players. They all have worked and have had therapy on their mental, how to accept nerves, you know, and you have to know that you're good. It's almost a cockiness. You have to know that you can make that shot. Mm-hmm. You have to know that, yes, this is a perfect example. When I'm shooting at a tournament, I'm with my friends a lot. Everybody that, you know, I've been in this game for a long time. So we all know each other when we shoot on the pro line. So when I step up, when I'm talking to my friends, you know, we're making it from one target to another, you know, when we're shooting 3D or whatever. And we're friends right here, right now. But as soon as I step to that line, their existence means nothing to me. It's all about me making this shot.
And that's all your focus is there.
That's it, you know. And some people, you know, go a little further than that. You know, I'm honestly, you have to put it into perspective sometimes that this is the way you feed your children. This is the way I chose to feed my children with shooting tournaments. And this guy is trying to keep me from feeding my children because he's trying to shoot a better score than I am. You know, you can really get deep into it. You know, that there's guys that go that far.
Yep.
Me, I don't want to go that far. I want to go, okay, yep, I know I have to get this done. Yes, you're not helping me right now. So I have to help myself get this, make this happen. And confidence is the biggest thing in archery. Consistency, a tuned bow, and confidence is what makes everything in archery, in my opinion. That's just my opinion, though.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think as soon as your bow is tuned enough, you become more consistent with where you're hitting and everything like that. And then that helps you as an archer shoot more consistently, you know, with your form and everything like that. And then it dumps over into your confidence and all of it works together. You know what I mean?
That's right. Fact of life. Well said, dude. I mean, it's exactly what it is. If you know your bow is shooting horribly, if you see that arrow kick, you know, every shot, you're like, man, sucks, you know, and all of a sudden you start to suck. You know what I mean? It
yep.
starts with you more and more. So absolutely, you know, don't be the thing is right now, I'm happy we're having this right now because this is the time of the year that I do start messing with my gear all
yep.
the time. I don't, there's no such thing as being 100% happy with my gear. I'm there a lot, 95%. I'm never 100% saying yes. My equipment is at its best that it could ever be because I'm not good enough to put that together, which is the confidence part. But I always strive. If you always say I got 5% that I can work with to make that even better, strive to make you keep striving for better and better shot and a better shot. If you say I'm 100%, you get lazy.
Yep. So
you start letting yourself slack.
Yeah. So with that, you know, I don't want to really dive into these topics, because like we already discussed that you're willing to come back on and do some tips and tactics where we will dive into the topics.
Okay.
But maybe just kind of like a bullet point, you know, cause like we already mentioned that now's the time of year that the new bows came out. People are getting their new bows. So, you know, what are a few of the steps that you take to get to where you feel your bow is tuned for you to start shooting? You know, I mean, and what I mean by that is like, do you generally, you know, put the rest on and then like walk back tune first or paper tune first? Or, you know, what's kind of your steps to get in it to where you're like, okay, now I can shoot it for a bit before I retune it and super tune it even farther? Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. So what I'll do is out of the box. Bo shows up, I throw a rest on it. Throw the rest on, and I'll make sure that I'm running through the burger button hole. Sometimes you have to mess with this a little bit. Sometimes you want to run a little high on the burger button. Sometimes you want to run a little low on the burger button. The closer you keep your arrow to your hand, the less leverage the arrow has to go somewhere else. So it keeps positive with your grip. If you put your rest way out there versus where your hand is, you have leverage in between there for it to go off of center of where you're shooting. So you want to keep everything kind of close there. So I always start out 90 degrees from my string through the burger button hole. And I'll put a loop on, and next thing I'll do is I'll draw the bow to see, make sure that my cams are timed now from where I've run from where I've decided to run my loop through. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So, you know, there's times where you draw your bow and you set it up, you set your knock point up a 16th high, and you draw your bow and you'll notice that, sure enough, your cams won't be hitting at the same time. And I try to make sure that here's a reference to it. I let the bow companies know where the bow shoots best. So if they say timed, I mean, it's something, yes, Ford makes a vehicle, but do they make the greatest tires? No, you go to a tire shop that has BF Goodrich or Goodyear. You know, if you want a great vehicle, you go to Ford or Chevy or Dodge or wherever. But I'm not going to go buy a tire from Ford. I'm going to go buy a tire from a tire shop. So that's like basically saying I'm not going to tell the bow company how to make the bow. That's what they're there for. They're making the best bows in the world. So when they say that cam should be perfectly timed, that's probably the best thing to do. I'll make sure that everything's nice. You know, I want my arrow to be 90 degrees from my string. Typically, if anything, I run just a hair high sometimes, not much. So make sure the arrow's dead center through the string, dead center through the handle. And I'll draw the bow, put a sight on it, make sure that my sight's, you know, 90 degrees, everything, my first, second axis is just right. And I'll shoot the arrow to see where it hits through paper. From there is where I move. Typically, you run through that process, you're going to get a really close tear to perfect. And a lot of guys, you know, they'll set up high, their knock point high to begin with. And it's like, hey, man, you know, set it dead center first. You know, make sure you're dead center. And if you have to play with it, you can creep up and down a string, but try out dead center first, always. And move from there if you have to. But that's typically where I start from. I start, you know, from factory specs.
Gotcha.
Making sure my bow is totally timed and run the paper. Paper is your best friend at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of that's perfect. That was like exactly what I'm looking for, because obviously there's about 900 other steps in between there.
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah. But for the purpose of this first podcast, you know, we can definitely go into that kind of stuff on the next ones we do. But yeah, that was perfect, you know, cause that kind of gives people a starting point, which is where a lot of people, you know, a lot of them are looking for that.
Oh, I'll tell you, I mean, like I said, you don't tell a heart surgeon how to do heart surgery, you know, these bow companies know what they're doing when they tell you, hey man, this is where this bow shoots best. You know, take it from them, you know, understand. They probably know what they're talking about, and see where the bow shoots for you. And you typically, you'll be right there, you know, within a quarter inch tear or something like that, you know, and that's easy to work with. That's a little bit of left and right on the rest, or, you know, I don't know, a lot of people do their own yoke tuning. I stick to the yoke a lot, just because I think it gives you a really defined bit of movement. And you know exactly how much you moved. Everything else, half a twist, full twist in one yoke or the other. And that's usually where I'll start out. Just making sure the bow is right where companies say it should be.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Do you, when the bow gets you, do you also like measure the axle to axle to make sure that it's what the specs should?
I do. I run axle to axle. I run from burger button to the string to get my brace, and I'll run my tiller. Your tiller is the point where your limbs meet your limb pockets. That's what you call a tiller, and I'll measure that on both top and bottom to make sure that they're in with each other. Or that's, some bows are different. The tiller's just a hair different than the other, and I'll take that and note, put it down where the bow was, and it helps me. Everything that I write down at the beginning, that's another one of your really good friends, is pen and paper.
Yeah.
Write things down. Write how many twists you put in your string to get your draw length just right, or write down right where your brace height is, where your axle to axle is, so you can go right back to that point. If something moves your bow, you know where to go back to.
Yep. That makes perfect sense, especially when you're, you know, everything's on the line at a tournament, or you're getting off the plane for your big hunt or something. It's much easier to just look down, measure them. Yep, all those are what they used to be. Shoot it once or twice. Yep, I'm good to go.
Fact of life. That's one of the biggest things. There's a whole bunch of things that, and I'm one of those guys that's stuck in, my draw length is 27 and a quarter. If, you know, we all know that bows come in half inch increments, not in quarter inch increments. So I'm always having to put twists here or take twists out here to get my draw length to fit right. People go, well, why don't you just put a longer loop in? Why don't you just put a shorter loop in, this, and that? We go back to contact, the amount of contact you want on your face. And I want almost no contact on my face. So that's another point of tuning. You know, you really want to make sure your draw length is exactly for you. No draw lengths are the same. So you do have to work on your draw length. You know, a lot of 90% of guys out there are overdrawn.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time. And I mean, you wish that you could help everybody, but, and a lot of guys go, oh, man, I'm 30 inch draw length. They're about 5'4" and they have a 30 inch draw length. And you're like, probably not going to work, but and they're way back behind the ear. And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a really big point, man. Having a bow that fits you.
Yeah.
Is so important. So important.
So when you talk about a bow that's fitting you, are you measuring, you know, from fingertip to fingertip, and then I don't remember, was it 2.5 or something like that, dividing that and to figure out a rough draw length? Or, you know, what are some of the ways that somebody can figure out their perfect draw length rather than, you know, going to the bow shop and the guy telling them a way that is just getting them close?
Okay, so what I typically do is if I'm standing beside a wall, I'll take my arm, my bow arm, and keep it nice and straight towards the wall, touch my knuckles to the wall, and have somebody measure from the wall to the corner of my mouth.
Really?
And that'll get you really, really close. Because your draw length isn't what is to the burger button to your corner of your mouth. It's beyond that. I believe it's 1 3/4 past the burger button hole. It's what's called an AMO draw length. Mm-hmm. So where the draw is at, where the bow is at full draw to 1 3/4 past the burger button hole, is AMO. It's either inch and a half or inch and three quarters. And that's what we call an AMO. And that's usually how I get my bow really close. I've known my drawing for so long that I know pretty much where, what post to put in and everything else. But yeah, for somebody that's just getting their first bow, you know, not, your body's not going to lie to you. So you measure, you know, from the wall, as you have a fist balled up from the wall to the corner of your mouth. And that'll get you really close to your drawing.
Cool. So what's the point behind making a fist as opposed to putting your hand flat on the wall, much like where the grip of the bow would be hitting your hand? I'd assume that must be like the inch and a quarter adding to the burger hole.
That's exactly what it is. Okay. Where your hand, open hand, hits would be where the burger buttonhole line is, because the point and curvature of your handle is usually dead center of the burger buttonhole. If you ever look at your bow, you look at your handle and where the handle starts to curve back towards you, that point, furthest point to the center of the burger buttonhole is exactly the same. So you look beyond that, you put your fist out there and you're adding, you know, what that AMO would be. And that's what you're looking for. So,
awesome.
It really helps. I most people really draw their bows. I mean, get their drawing figured out like that. I keep a slight bend in my elbow for anybody that, you know, is wondering straight arm or not a straight arm. I keep a slight bend in my elbow to help with reaction of the shot. So I want to be able to push and pull, and I want to have something to push through so I don't lock my arm out.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Keep a slight bend in the elbow. And we're learning more and more. Everybody always talks about bone on bone. You know, that makes the most consistency. You know, you do want a little bit of bend in that elbow so you can help to push through. And you're not working against your joints so bad.
Yeah. With
tennis elbow and all that stuff. You know, bad, bad stuff.
Yep. And that's all stuff that equals less archery shooting in the future.
Fact of life. You're hearing of torn rotator cuffs, tennis elbow to where guys can't even pull 40 pounds anymore. Like, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
I still draw 75 to 80 pounds. You know, that's because I have a shorter draw length. I compensate that by drawing more weight, but not hurting my body doing it.
Uh-huh.
I don't like seeing a locked elbow, honestly. I think it's really bad for your body. So for anybody out there thinking about that, yes, I totally recommend don't shoot with a very straight elbow. Slight bend in the elbow just to keep it more muscle, less bone.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I had, like, as we're talking about all this stuff, so many questions continue to come up. Like, I could probably just talk with you for a solid week straight and still have more questions. But in the meantime, maybe, you know, maybe you and I can talk about some of the questions I have off show and that can formulate into topics for another show. Cause I think, you know, obviously, if I have the questions, I would assume that there's other people out there that probably have the same ones. So, but in the meantime, man, I really, really appreciate you hopping on the podcast and taking the time out of your morning and sharing a bunch of the tips and tactics and ideas, and obviously telling about yourself. I mean, I couldn't imagine the look on those people's face when you were just boarding this train with your bow case. Like,
man, it was definitely one of those things you gotta go, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. You know, you think later on in life, and people are wondering what's wrong with this kid carrying around this thing that, you know, looks like a half a circle. Remember those old bow cases? They were weird. Everybody always asks, is that some kind of instrument? No. You know, yeah, sure. An instrument, sure.
It's an instrument. Yeah, it's got strings like a violin, so let's call it one of those.
That's right. That's exactly it, man. It really, I mean, when we moved to New York, it was hard. I was there for 8 years of my youth, and it was some of the hardest time because I'm a country boy.
Yep.
And, you know, because business is business, you know, my dad had to do what was right for his family at the time, and he had to move us. But he instilled in us, you know, how important hunting still is to our family. And we still got to go. Even though we were in New York, we still found places to go hunt.
Awesome.
Which is great. You know?
Well, yeah. Like I say, though, I do. I appreciate you coming on the show. I had a blast talking with you and getting to know you. I can't wait to have you back on.
Sounds good, man.
Thank you for tuning into the show. It means a lot to us.
But seriously, though, I really appreciate your ear. And it would mean the world to me if you would rate our podcast. If you didn't like it, one star it. But if you did, a 5 is even better. Don't forget to comment, like, share, and hit that subscribe button. Thanks again for tuning into the show. Some other podcasts that you should definitely check out are
Eastman Elevating with Bride and Barney,
and Hunt Harvest Health with Ryan and Hillary Lampers.
Some other YouTube channels to check out:
Hardworking Hunter, Sterling's Extremes Outdoors, and Lane Walter Productions.
And a special thanks to
Maven Optics, Six Sight Gear, Dark Energy Tech, Shield Mountain Outdoors, The Outdoor Insiders, Iron Mind Hunting, Valkyrie Archery, and Gannett Ridge Sporting Equipment.